Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. People often ask me how I can produce so many books. I'll do six this year, including two fun books, a children's book, and the rewriting and republishing of three novels. That's what I love doing. I used to tell people I'm just really organized. It comes naturally to me. And I began to feel smug as I helped other people write maybe one or two books that they were probably all they were going to write in their lifetime. But then 2 years ago, my primary guide, Thomas, broke into my daytime life. All of us have guides, of course, that we consult with at night. But now I communicate with Thomas through Suzanne Wilson in the daytime. During that first conversation, he said he wanted me to channel Liberating Jesus. And in the course of those amazing 2 weeks when I channeled that book, I came to realize, that all my books are channeled. No wonder I'm able to write them so fast. It was a very humbling moment, I have to tell you, when I realized that. It turns out that I have two groups of guides, one for nonfiction and one for fiction, and they decide what books I'm going to write and when I'm going to write them. I've tried writing on my own, and it is impossible, so I'm real humble now. All of this comes to mind because my guest this week is Ivanhoe Chaput, and he's an entrepreneur. He holds 14 patents and is obviously also being guided by spirit. That's part of what I love, why I love what he does. He calls his gift claircognizance. We're going to talk about that. And it has led him to draw pretty much the same conclusions about reality that we've been talking about here. Ivanhoe is interested in great many things. His new book is called Why People Fight. And it's wonderfully consistent with what you and I talk about, with a few differences that we'll consider here. Welcome, Ivanhoe. I'm so delighted you're here.
Yes. Oh, what a pleasure. I'm extremely delighted as well.
I'd like to begin to just do a quick overview of who you are so people can know who they're listening to.
Well, I'm 70 years old. I've been around the block a few times, but my main business is engineering, product design, and development. I take ideas and turn them into products, but I've always had an interest in things of the outside the normal, you know. And I saw a UFO when I was a kid, and it flew right over my house, and so I believe in that. And then I was very interested in ghosts because one of my friends saw one go over a fence one time, and I'm going, really? Well, how did it do that? And he seemed so believable. And so then my interest in life after death was really peaked after my mom passed away, and I kept looking up at the sky and going, geez, where's my mom? You know, where's my dad? So my first book was, my first book was Where's My Mom and Dad? And so it just went from there. I love writing.
Yeah, it really is fun. It's really fun when it's being channeled, I have to tell you, because then you don't worry about anything. It just flows. And it sounds like you're having the same thing happen. Tell people what claircognizance is.
Well, claircognizance is basically you could probably call it mental kinesthetics. It's being able to sense things from more of a physical standpoint as opposed to clairvoyance, where you can see things, or clairaudience, where you hear things. And claircognizance is more of just an understanding of what could happen with physical things.
So you're working in the physical world, and you have this insight then that seems to come from spirit with regard to what's going on in the physical world.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times I will guess at stress and strains of materials and that, and get it actually closer than the people that are doing the finite element analysis. And I've been able to do that for years and years.
Wow. Well, all right. So you're in touch with spirit, clearly, and your mind is open. And I think that's for everyone. I'm just saying that's what it takes. Everybody has these abilities. They're natural to human beings. But most of us close them off because we tend to believe the erroneous things we're told by science. And everyone can do what Ivanhoe can do. I just think it's too bad most people miss the fun of this. But now, you wrote about fighting. Why fighting? Why did that interest you?
Well, I was driving down the Hawthorne Boulevard here on the way to work, and I heard someone, Dennis Prager, was talking about a book that he wrote called Why We Fight, and I thought it was about the causes as to why we get angry with each other and misunderstandings and that. And then I got to the office when I looked into it. It was about fighting for our freedoms and our country and preserving democracy. And I thought, well, that's not what I thought it was about at all. So I thought it might be interesting to write about what anger is rather than what anger does.
Yeah, and I think your book is great. It's easy to read. What I love is people who write with humility and humor. Your book isn't long, but it's full of pithy stuff, and it's very interesting, and it's fun, and it's funny in spots. And I just thought it was great. You really get to a sense of who Ivanhoe is when you read the book. But you have a lot to say about these emotions, these negative emotions that seem to cause fighting. Can you talk about that? Tell us what you learned about these negative emotions.
Well, a lot of things that I did my research on made me really scratch my head, and I said, well, boy, there's got to be more to what a lot of these psychologists are saying. And I thought, well, I need to understand this more and to understand why people fight could essentially have to do with a pre-birth contract that we made with ourselves before we ever came here. And Ian Stevenson was a psychiatrist who worked for the University of Virginia School of Medicine, and he wrote this amazing book that it's called 20 Cases, 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation in 1966 that became a real classic. And in that, I tied that his writings with people that have had near-death experiences saying that they really came here with some plan, some just not a contract with themselves, but like I spoke with Beverly Brodsky there, who was the at the Ions in San Diego, and she said one of the things she said was, "I wish I knew what I had signed up for."
Yes, so. I wouldn't have come if I'd known. Right. Well, so we've talked about this before on Seek Reality. Of course, we all come in with life plans, and we make them together with our own guides and with the people who will be important in our lives and with their guides. But you're saying now that you think that we came in planning to have a predisposition to be angry?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. We come in here to learn something, and the choice we're given the gift of choice, and so what we were endowed with is our genetics, the things that make up our brain, really give us a very interesting take on what it is that makes us angry, and that's the relationship between different parts of the brain, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex and other parts of the brain that we don't have complete control over, but there are some of these parts of the brain that will trigger negative behaviors, and then what do we do about it? You know, do we actually get into some altercation because of our belief systems?
You were saying that it's aspects of the brain that really affect what we're going to end up doing. Talk about that.
Well, there's a couple of parts of the brain. The amygdala and is an area of the brain that quickly warns of impending danger, and the prefrontal cortex that determines if the danger is real. And there's a Professor Raines, who made a study at the University of Southern California, wanted to determine whether brains of serial killers, people who have murdered on impulse, were different from normal people's brains. And what he found was an underdeveloped prefrontal cortex.
So that was that. Basically, they didn't have a governor then for their emotions, and so that was one reason why they went crazy that way.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
It's a reactionary thing, and so what he also alluded to was that young people also have an underdeveloped prefrontal cortex until they get into adulthood, and that's probably why a lot of young people today are getting into altercations in schools and that, because they make these quick reactionary decisions, and the prefrontal cortex is not engaging to let them know that, hey, this isn't right.
So, all right, here's a question. I mean, we know from studying the afterlife evidence that our minds are really not, they're not generated by our brains. Our brains are basically receivers and transmitters and not the generators. But what you're saying is you can tell from the brain whether someone has these bad tendencies. It's like the chicken and the egg. Do you think that the mind modifies the brain in these ways? Have you any idea what would make it our brains be different that way?
Well, I think it's from what I've researched, it's actually a genetic thing that come into these vessels, these bodies, we're given this geometry of brain structure, and just to learn how to deal with it and with the decisions that we make, and to when we come here, that's why we have such a difficult time sometimes exercising love, because of some of these conditions that we were provided with at birth.
So what you're saying is interesting. So what you're saying is that maybe as part of our life plan, we chose to be born into a family that had what amounted to a genetic predisposition to violence or to anger, right?
Exactly.
And that's part of our
exactly.
challenge. Yeah, that's a great – I never thought of it that way. That's great. Okay.
Yes.
And how does the ego fit in?
Yeah, that part of the book is really under the title of we cannot be wrong. And the reason we can't be wrong is because we really are here with godlike qualities, and that all the decisions that we make us right. And so that doesn't mean we always make right decisions. We make right decisions according to the ego and our self-preservation and those things. When we do find out that we've been wrong, we just replace it with another right.
Oh, how fascinating. Is everybody that way, or is that just a tendency that some people have to be able so that they're not able to change or to learn a new way of thinking?
Oh, I think being right is psychological across the board, and we all have this internal voice inside us that talks to us, and our actions are according to what our beliefs are, and our beliefs basically, essentially, can't be wrong unless they're replaced with enough logic that corrects what was wrong, and now we have this new paradigm we're living in. That oh my gosh, how could I have believed that? And now this is now what's correct.
You have a whole chapter called We Simply Can't Be Wrong. I think we all do have that sense, especially as we get a little bit older, that we know everything because we've pretty much figured it all out. And to have a new paradigm entered is pretty difficult to kind of adjust to. What have you found? Are many people basically hardening their beliefs, and does it happen over time, or what have you learned?
No, we're wired that way from birth, and it's like the sign that said hire a teenager while they still know everything, you know. So, but we're always right until another right replaces it.
I'd like to get into violence. One of the things you do is to indict violent entertainments in video games as perhaps making people more violent. What else makes people violent? I mean, why do things escalate as they do? Do you have any sense?
Well, part of it is your internal rightness, which we have talked about, you know, I'm right, you're wrong kind of thing. And
right.
if that is
right.
not left alone, blood pressure rises and eventually people will get into an argument and escalate that sort of thing. Most people can control that. However, there are certain types of people, and I talk about sociopaths and psychopaths, who really don't have a control over their proclivities, and so they're very, because they see neurotypicals as being weak, they're very, very hard to treat.
But you go into a bar and you step up to the bar and you're having a nice evening with friends, and someone gets in a little argument with you. What do you do? I mean, what if he turns out to be a sociopath and you don't have any? I mean, how should people handle that if things start to escalate?
Oh my gosh! The best thing is to walk away. These certain types of people, and especially, and you won't know a psychopath. They hide their personalities very well. They're very clever people, and they always are right within their own minds. And so it's very difficult to deal with these people. One psychopath that is of fame is the shooting. Oh gosh, what was his name? The two young men that shot up the school there. But one of them was
a
known psychopath. Yes, and then his friend was also a very violent person, but he wasn't a psychopath. But these two joining together, boy, they really wreak havoc. And the best thing to do is to get away from these people. Don't associate with them if you think that they may have these tendencies, because they're dangerous people.
Now, one of the things that you talk about is how these things escalate. And that kind of made me uncomfortable, because I've never seen any of these events, but you have some spectacular stories about how things can go wrong. So your advice is just walk away. And if they follow you, maybe run. What do you do then?
Oh yes. There was one time, you know, I was in the deep South. I was an ordained minister in my early 20s, and then kind of fell away from religion in general. But I was having a discussion with these two Baptist preachers, and over some Bible verses that we disagreed upon. And these two pastors got red-faced, and their fists got clenched, and I thought they were going to come after me, and I just got out of there.
You're kidding. Oh, my goodness. Bible verses are fighting words in the Deep South, I guess. Wow.
Well, that's why they call it the Bible Belt. You talk about the Bible, they don't agree with you, and they'll belt you one, I think.
That's where it comes from? Oh, my goodness. That's kind of awful. Well, people who are listening know I will carefully stay out of those areas, because I would get belted for sure. They wouldn't like anything I had to say. But you seem to think that fighting is natural to human beings. Did I get that right? Is that how you feel?
Well, I don't think it's natural. I think it's something that is very difficult to avoid because of the way that our brains work and our really our self-preservation and then disagreeing on points with other people. I think it's just part of our makeup, but it's not something that we can't avoid, and it's not something that we can't overcome. Exercising love and appreciation for other people is difficult, but you don't have to resort to violence and fighting over it, although there are so many people that do, and they don't. I think they're just not aware that they're really engaging in an activity that is not going to benefit them.
I would just interject here that my book, The Fun of Growing Forever, contains some very helpful exercises that will help you learn to forgive basically everything that's going on around you so it doesn't even bother you. And repeatedly, Ivanhoe, when I was reading your book and reading about these fights and all this negativity, I thought, you know, if only those guys had my book, they wouldn't be in this mess. Because really, nobody wants to spend their life fighting. I mean, you know, getting beaten up or just feeling just the negative energy of being in a fight. So, you know, just read The Fun of Growing Forever and try those exercises. That might be another way to get out of it. But do you think our violent entertainments are inducing people to be more violent? Because you seem to think that. I mean, parts of your book.
Well, not really. If you have a propensity for violence to begin with, this could be the spark that pushes you over the edge. Just like, I remembered his name now, Eric Harris.
Yes.
Was one of those shooters. If you have these tendencies, then watching these violent video games could be the thing that pushes you over the edge. Psychologists have studied this, and they've kind of avoided the issue of these violence in the media as affecting the general population. And they're correct. I mean, it doesn't lead to a life of crime. However, if you have these propensities, that could be just the little push that just sends you over the edge.
We're talking with Ivanhoe Chukwudh. We share a publisher. We both love her. CFA Publishing and Media. It publishes us both. And when I saw that looked like an interesting book, I asked about it. And our publisher said, hey, you're going to love him. And I do. So I'm so glad I took her advice. But let's talk about, can you think of anything we can do to try to turn things around in the United States? Because we're all concerned about the fact that our murder rate has escalated, our violence in the cities has escalated. What would you suggest we do, if anything?
Well, let me start out with, there's a researcher named Peter Turchin who's been studying violence and the cycles of violence and that, and he seems to think that this is just a cycle that is going to go on more and more. I agree with you. I think that we need to, like, eat an elephant one bite at a time. It's going to, I really believe that the research into near-death experiences and these people that have come back and to tell about this is taking hold. It's getting more and more popular. I remember when I wrote my first book or started researching this about 8-10 years ago, there wasn't much on it, but I think more and more people are learning about it, I think the people who are learning more about love and the other side and our purpose for being here is going to reduce the amount of violence that we have.
See, I exactly agree with you. I think that it's ignorance that fuels all of the negativity in this world. And once people get a clue that our minds are eternal, we never began, we never will end, people will change their whole attitude toward their lives and the lives of others. And peace will break out. I think that's what's going to happen. Because we're all here to learn to love more perfectly. That's what all the bad things happen is so you can choose love anyway and never fear. So I agree with you. I think it's very difficult. Our perspective is wrong. It's difficult for us to see how the larger picture is unfolding. But we're told by advanced beings that actually it's already changing, and I can kind of begin to see it now. I agree. Near-death experiences are important. Learning about completed deaths is important, too, because our perspective right now is, you know, 80 years. Everyone thinks in terms of 80 years and getting theirs while they're here. And we can change that and make our perspective eternal. And then we're going to care a lot more about the world and about our, especially about our own spiritual growth. And that's probably, I agree with you, that's probably the only thing that is really going to make a material change.
Oh, yes. And if this is exploited, you mentioned 80 years. Each generation that comes about seems to be starting over. And there are many people that are reading a whole lot of books. In fact, the IQ of the world in general has dropped by several points since 1950.
Really?
So,
why?
Oh, yes. Don't really know why, but it has been dropping. But I think that the slowness of learning about the other side and what is changeable on the planet in general, I believe that I may have sounded a little pessimistic in my book, but I think that the change will be slow, but with each generation you keep adding, and then I believe it's going to grow exponentially at some time, and that's when the new epic is going to unfold, where technology and money and greed are going to be almost things of the past.
What I loved about your book is that I'm just too much of an optimist by nature. And what your book was, your book didn't seem pessimistic, actually. It kind of gave my sense of that things are getting better more of a grounding, because I had never thought about the causes of fighting, the causes of violence, and how stupid so many of our fights are. Because you have some great stories in there of just totally nutty things people do, but they can't stop themselves and they end up in a battle. And getting that perspective on the fact that so much of what we fight over is plain stupid, not obviously fight for your freedom. I mean, there's some fights you have to fight, but fighting over, you know, the bag of potato chips or the bag of peanuts, maybe not. Maybe there are some things that are just not worth that, because it does generate so much negative energy when we do engage in altercations. So I found your book actually optimistic. It wasn't pessimistic, but it did give me a sense it may be harder to end all of this than I had thought before.
Yes, and one of the things about the brain, though, is when after someone does get in a fight and wins, dopamine is released and people get a high from it. I don't know if you've ever watched the octagon, the people fighting in this octagon, when they win, boy, they just get all kinds of excited. And even in, I researched gangs and street fighting, and so what happens there is one gang will win in a altercation and they get all excited, but then the other gang exercises sweet revenge, and so now they get on. And so it's like the ping pong ball of violence going back and forth.
Yeah, to get positive feedback from doing something bad is really bad. But it may be that there still is a way to divert them toward more positive sources of pleasure, don't you think? If they have other things to do than fight in the streets, maybe they'd find them more fun. Because that's another thing you said, that working with them, with the street gangs, and helping them to find better things to do does seem to help.
Yes.
I found that very
encouraging. It gives them a sense of purpose, because there's nothing worse than a group of young men with guns in the house with nothing to do and then talking about someone up the street dissing them, you know. And so it grows within their own minds.
And that part is really something we have to immediately address, the fact that so many kids are killing each other in the streets. But that's only one aspect of violence. One of the things that your book does is make me understand that there are many different kinds of fighting. And it just complicates our lives so much and so unnecessarily, because most of the things that we fight about are just not worth the negative energy that they require and that they expend. So I think that gave me a perspective on how dumb a lot of what we do actually is, Ivanhoe.
Oh yes, I do not like violence or fighting. My wife and I never we don't argue because she knows I dislike it so much.
What else have you written about? What are you working on now?
Well, right now I'm writing another book that has to do with why there are so many different reports of people describing what they saw on the other side. And it's called probabilities in the afterlife. And what I think that an awful lot of people see and experience, they bring with them. Not only that, but I think the spirits and the spirit guides assist you by showing you what you're familiar with. And so many people
yes.
come back with, this is what heaven is like. Well,
yes.
that's what you saw it was like, you know.
You're so right. Here's the thing. What the dead tell us is that near-death experiences have no relationship to death. They're an entirely different phenomenon. And because if people come back, they basically never made it to where the dead actually are. And most of what happens to them is pulled from their own mind. So, you see, you have such wonderful insights. That's absolutely what the dead are telling us as well.
Yes. And so what it really is like on the other side is essentially very little is really known about it. And one of the things that I did many years ago, this was in 1979 through 81, I had a lady that she doesn't want me to mention her name, and I don't know why, but we wrote a book together called Sai, A Spirit Entity from the Eighth Sphere. And
wow.
I learned so much about the other side from this entity, Sai. And I have 37 cassette recordings right here in my office of that took 2 years to do. And I submitted it. I showed it to a person at the UCLA, their parapsychology department in UCLA. And this person was just blown away. He said, you know what? He says, this information has got to get out somehow. But the person I wrote it with didn't want me to publish the book.
Well, that's terrible. Why?
I know. I still don't understand why, but I've taken excerpts out of that book now, and I'm adding them to my new work now called Probabilities of Heaven, and so I'm taking not just snippets, but sometimes complete whole chapters and putting it in there. So that's what I'm working on now.
You're not taking the whole book. You're just taking major portions of it. That's fine. I love it. You have a little larceny in your heart. That's a good thing. So,
well, I'm not mentioning her name, so I think it's okay.
Okay. Well, so what do you hope to accomplish with what you're doing now? What do you hope people will take away for what you're doing? Why do you work? I know it's hard to be a writer and work so hard at it. And why do you do it?
Oh my gosh. Just the love of learning. You know, I live in the question. I question everything. And the more that I learn, the more I find out that other people are also interested in some of these things. And I said, well, maybe a book it is. And so my first book, Where's My Mom and Dad, was about that my mom and dad are not nowhere, that they're actually somewhere. And that really gave me a lot of solace on their passing.
Yeah, I think a lot of us feel that way when we lose the generation above us. We especially want to know they're okay because we're going next. I remember that feeling when my mother died. And so, yeah, that's very comforting to know that. And all your books are available, of course, on Amazon, right?
Yes.
And the way you spell his name is Ivanhoe. I love your first name, by the way. I've never known anybody with that name. Ivanhoe. And his last name is Chaput. And so when do you, will your next book be out? You're still writing.
Well,
you aren't sure.
I'm still, yeah, I think it'll, we'll probably, another couple of months I may finish it. I've got some huge engineering projects right now that I'm working on. So that's keeping me so busy. And I normally work 7 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day, except Saturday and Sunday. Then I leave early. I leave about 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Oh, well, yeah, you're slacking big time, Ivanhoe. So what's your website? Yeah. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, my engineering website, they can get to it by typing CC, D as in dog, E, S as in Sam, IGN, and that's the name of my company, CC Design, at flash, FLASH.net.
Oh, that's a fancy one. And there's a way to contact you through the website?
Yes, the phone number is on there. Uh-huh.
Oh, good. Okay, so if people have questions, they can get in touch with you.
Oh, sure.
So what do you hope? You hope people will learn more about what reality is, how best to live their lives, maybe get some peace in the area of fear?
Absolutely. Since I've been doing this research, my life has changed so dramatically. I am much more forgiving, loving, open. I have my nephew works for me. He's got Asperger's syndrome, and he's he doesn't make me anywhere as upset as he used to.
Yes.
And it's not him, it's me. You know, I've changed. I've become much more. I've grown so much.
That is the great fruit of learning all of this stuff. It gives you a vast sense of peace and comfort and patience with other people. It makes you happy in ways that before I really started to get this stuff, I didn't even dream you could be as happy as we are now. So thank you. That's a wonderful insight. And I'm so delighted I've been hearing your name quite a bit, so I'm so glad to finally meet you. And we'll have to do this again when your next book is out, because I think that's an area where we can really talk, since I'll have to send you a copy of The Fun of Dying, dear, because that might help you with the book you're working on now. But thank you so much for joining me, Ivanhoe, and let's keep in touch.
Oh, yes. This was so much fun. This is my first interview like this, and I did thoroughly enjoyed it.
I think I've talked him into becoming a radio person, so let's watch for more from him. You have been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. I'm delighted that you could join us today. Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really grasp what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, and this is one I've been working on for a while, our guest finally will be Robin Foy. He's going to be speaking with us all the way from Spain. Robin was part of the Skoll Experimental Group in the late 90s in Norfolk, England. And that group has been, to date, the most productive collaboration between living researchers and dead researchers ever attempted. Spectacular. You've got to read the Skoll report. It's just extraordinary. And it worked so wonderfully and for so long that the very fact that it was so successful and the fact that that's so rare, it really troubles me. If they could do it, why can't more people do it? But so far, and this happened 20 years ago, that's the best that's happened. But we're going to talk to Robin about that extraordinary historical experience that he was part of, and maybe talk about, what might be coming next in this sense of collaborating between the living and the dead. I mean, I'm aware of other collaborations now, just not so spectacular. So please join us next week. Today, our guest has been Ivanhoe Chaput. Ivanhoe and I share a publisher, Christine F. Anderson Publishing and Media, and every author that CFA publishes has a wonderful story to tell. So I knew Ivanhoe was going to be interesting. I just didn't know he was going to be such a delightful person. We were having a lot of fun chatting off air when we were having the breaks. Very interesting man. He's a self-taught polymath. People who are interested in everything and basically do their own research can discover things that people who are in a more traditional sort of learning setting really never get to. And his book, Why People Fight, really is very enjoyable to read. I approached it with trepidation because of the title, but it's really a lot of fun. And it's realistic, but it's hopeful. So I think if you're interested in and worried about where the world is heading, Ivanhoe's book is for you. I enjoy it. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever, and now The Fun of Living Together. They're available from bookstores on Amazon as audiobooks and in 33 languages worldwide. If you want to talk about any of my books or really talk about anything at all, you always can contact me through robertagrimes.com. And sometimes it's hard, but so far I've been able to answer every email. Recent episodes of Seek Reality are available here on boldbravemedia.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast now on Dream Vision 7 Radio and on the X Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates at xzbn.net. They're available as podcasts on webtalkradio.net, which I think is where most people pick us up. But I'm hearing from more and more people, for example, who hear us on Dream Vision 7 Radio. And they're also available on the special app at the iTunes App Store. This app is free. And I hear from people who say, wow, why didn't you do this sooner? Apparently, it makes it very easy to keep up with what we're talking about. And of course, if you're ever wondering in the future where Seek Reality can be heard now, just go to robertagrimes.com and click on the radio tab. Dear friends, I want you to know, I don't say this often enough, that I am very grateful for your friendship. This work of raising the planet's consciousness would be impossible for a few of us just to do alone, but together we can do it and it's going to be joyous. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.